Welcome to the Minibate Gang Podcast, episode 257. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Taking a break from reading about the missing plane stories.
Yeah. And Phil Wilson.
Jello.
How you boys doing today?
Great, thank you.
Great.
Good, good, good. Yeah, the plane story keeps getting more and more interesting by the day.
It's like Lost, but it's for real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, maybe they just went into a vortex.
So, well, are they typing numbers into an Apple IIe computer, though? That's the question.
That's the question. So, so my question is, so what do you think really happened?
Oh, well, someone took the plane over, obviously, either a hijacker or maybe the pilots were in on it, and they were trying to fly it somewhere. Maybe they were successful and they landed the thing. Who knows?
Yeah, I think there were a person or persons on board they wanted to get, and they flew it somewhere and got them off, and then who knows what happened to everybody else.
Hopefully, do you think it has something to do with these two guys that had fake passports?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they investigated them and said they didn't look suspicious, but there's a lot not being said. They've got to be combing over the personal records of everybody, we're not hearing about it yet. But
The big thing for me was, I don't know if you heard this, but there were family members of people on the plane that were really upset because they said, hey, when we call our loved ones, their phones ring 4 or 5 times. And if the phones were off, they would only ring once and then go to voicemail. So obviously their phones are on. And several different governments came out and basically said, oh, no, that's not the case. The phones are off, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, wouldn't the phones be handshaking with towers all over the world, if they were on and they landed somewhere?
So you would think so, yeah.
They'd be able
But I heard that ringing means it's just trying to reach the network. It's could not be. Really yeah. ringing, you know. Yeah. But I also saw a tweet. It's like, if the plane was hijacked, why aren't the passengers calling people that they know like they did on other hijack situations?
Because they were at 45,000 feet where they probably couldn't get a signal.
Yeah. Well, they did go up that high. Yeah. Not for the whole time, but for an extended period of time, apparently, which could have killed them, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, probably would have. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, really sad. But I was going to say the Times the Mirror in London reported that Yuri Geller has been called in.
Oh, God. To what, the Ben Spoons?
Yeah. Right. He's being asked what's going on.
Well, I mean, seriously.
I'm frustrated with this search. Let's bend some spoons.
Let's bend some spoons. That's the only thing I think about with Yuri Geller is that he could bend spoons, supposedly.
Yep. Well, it'll distract our attention for a while anyway, I guess.
Oh, my God.
I do. I am in awe sometimes how, Steve, you manage to take every topic we discuss and turn it to tech. I think it's one of those things that's very important.
Wait, how'd I do that with Yuri Geller?
We're talking about the phones, the cell phones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's true.
Sorry, the Yuri Geller was just a pleasant little distraction.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
I'm always in awe.
People are saying, in this day and age, how can something like this happen? That's what they've been screaming since the first disappearances. How can something just disappear with all the technology that we have?
It's Malaysia Air, for God's sake.
Well, it's an American American built airplane, though.
Yeah, but still, garbage in, garbage out, son. If they don't have somebody that knows how to run the stuff, then, or if they have somebody that is smarter than they are as far as what to shut off and what to leave on, you can make anything disappear. Just ask David Copperfield.
Yeah.
Let's get him on.
Well, you know what? He's probably a suspect because he has made planes disappear before in the past.
Oh my gosh!
Let's get off of that.
World of tech, for gosh sakes! Because you know, a day without a story about Target and their security,
it's
like a day without sunshine. So.
Yeah.
So now they knew about it. When was it? The 12th of December, 30th of November, something like that.
November 30th.
November 30th.
Yep.
And when the Bangalore team reported problem. When
everything was, all the lights were flashing and they said, hey, shut that damn thing off.
Oh, man. You talk about a fall from grace, though. I mean, can a corporation, a modern corporation, retailer or not, have such a sudden, you know, impact on their brand than this?
But it's only a matter of time. We forget.
Oh, it's going to cost them way big bucks.
It's going to cost them for a while, but it always passes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is a very long story, and it's an interesting story, but it doesn't really talk about why they didn't do anything, because there are so many times they could have, you know, either stopped the attack or stopped it at the beginning. Why they let it go for so long is not really answered here.
Corporate structure?
Well, they said that it was new software, and that some of them were skeptical. That's really the only thing they said in the story, was that some of the people on the team were skeptical that this new software, what is it called, FireEye, actually worked. So that's why they turned off the ability to delete the malware, which apparently the software has. And they could have done a lot of things. So they apparently the malware was, you know, the software was able to look inside of it and see username and passwords of servers that where the hackers were sending all the information, and they could have physically logged into these servers and seen what was there. And they didn't do that.
Well, see, wow. I just wonder if it has to do with the potential disruption of their network during what's arguably the busiest season of the year for them, where they, you know, probably bring in about 60% of their profits in the fall selling season.
Yeah. And they want to go into a maintenance mode.
Yeah. And do anything at all. I'm sure that's what it was, but
I'm sure it had a lot to do with it. Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Bad choice, whatever it was, bad choice.
Yeah, it just seems the whole story is getting, it's just getting weirder and weirder as it goes along as we learn more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So.
Well, you know, that FireEye software is extremely complex and hard to learn. But you know, you have to wonder, where were the FireEye training people with the Target staff? And weren't the FireEye people trying to help them, you know, use this complex software? And, you know, how could they just go AWOL? I mean, the staff at Target and the FireEye people, who you would think would be almost right alongside them, particularly in their busy selling season, helping them learn the nuances of the software, which takes a long time to perfect. So, you know, you talk about a bad software implementation. Of course, those are legendary, I guess, in the IT world. You know, they never go smoothly, and they often take a year or more. Right, Steve?
Absolutely.
I mean, but wow, it's bad, and it's going to cost them even more money, because now the card companies are going to be suing them blind. So not a good future ahead for them financially either. I mean, from that standpoint, as well as from lost consumer confidence.
No. Well, I just wonder, you know, Greg Steinhoff, the CEO, is able to get rid of his sacrificial lamb, the CIO. And yep. I'm just wondering if that's going to save him, or he's just got a little bit more time.
I don't know. I think he's just
maybe just getting started.
Yeah. He's just rolling around the rim now. So it'll take a while before he goes down the drain.
Good analogy. Good metaphor. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, stay tuned next week for the next chapter in Target.
So,
a broadcasting company has acquired an internet broadcasting company.
Yes, my buddies, Reed Johnson and George Johnson started Internet Broadcasting Systems back in the 90s.
95, I think it was.
Doing TV websites. They did WCCO first. And great story on how they started. They actually went to the Twins and got them to agree to be a sponsor. And then they went to the Vikings. And then they went to WCCO and said, look, we got sponsors lined up. You know, you need this. We want to do it. And they said, sure, let's do it. And that was their first website. So that was kind of a fun beginning for them.
Couple of great entrepreneurs, you know. Yeah. They saw an opportunity and they seized it, went out and sold a couple of, you know, companies on the idea. And I wonder how they feel about the acquisition now. Have you talked to George, Steve?
No, I haven't. You know, clearly they'll get something out of it.
They damn well better.
Well, but the kicker is that they bought it for $20 million.
Which is not a lot of money.
That's not a lot of dough.
No.
You know, when you think about probably how diluted they both are right now.
Oh, yeah. I doubt they got rich. Yeah. I talked to a couple of former insiders too. And, you know, I'm guessing at 20 million, that can't be more than, one X revenues or maybe,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they assume they have 2X in that and 40 million in revenues. I don't know. I doubt it, but the paper said, and the news release says that it was 5x projected 2014 earnings,
right,
or EBITDA, which sounds better. But, you know, and what it doesn't say, what none of the stories say, at least I don't think, is I wonder how it's going to affect the staff. Well, whether it will all stay here. I think I did read where it would. It's not going away. And it's only about 140 people now. At its peak, it was pushing 400, I recall. So it's been greatly downsized over the years. And, you know, I'm hearing that if it's getting five times earnings, the turnaround or the right sizing, as it might be called, was probably a good success and things are humming along okay. And so it was a mild win for somebody, some of the shareholders, I guess. I think Hearst is one of those too. They're one of those big, they're one of their big customers.
Yes,
they are. And, which are named. Yeah.
Well, and Vance Opperman
mm-hmm.
was a big investor early on.
Yeah.
In IBS. So.
Yeah, he had preferred shares, I'm sure. So yeah. Those are the people that'll do well as the preferred shareholders.
Always.
Yep. Leave the little guy in the dust.
It's tougher and tougher to get rich, doggone it.
It is.
Well, I just had to point this out because the email literally came in this morning about Senator Al Franken wants to stop the Comcast acquisition of Time Warner Cable. Because it could mean higher prices, worse service, and fewer options for cable consumers. And so he's got a support page for it. And so I was kind of interested in that because he's really now out promoting that.
So. Well, they're grandstanding. That's the term Julio uses, you know, when Franken and Amy Klobuchar coming out with these consumer issues, you know. But, you know, I find it hard to argue with him. I mean, Comcast is looking more and more like the evil empire to most people.
Yeah. But, you know, the kicker is that I'm always interested in political theater like this. But I'm concerned when somebody like Al Franken, who's, you know, all about privacy and he's all about net neutrality and all of that, literally has said nothing about the NSA surveillance scandal. Nothing at all. And Klobuchar hasn't really said anything either. And I've just been sort of surprised about that. So,
yeah. Anyway. Well, yeah, they take positions on lots of things, but they conveniently ignore others. You know, right, that's right. That's not right.
That
know?
Seems odd with his position on net neutrality. So, you know, being so strong.
Yeah.
You know, has he said anything about Snowden?
Nothing.
That's really odd.
Nothing that I can find. So.
Well, they pick their favorites, and they only have so much staff and time to.
Yeah.
Try to do this stuff, I guess.
Well, the only thing is, last summer, he had said something about the NSA, and he was kind of defending the NSA over the whole spying allegations. But then it seems as though during the acceleration in the revelations from all the Snowden documents, he kind of stopped talking about it. So anyway.
Well, he's coming up for re-election, so he's looking for the best consumer issue that he can home in on. And everybody hates the lack of competition
in
cable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it polls well, and that's what they do, you know?
Yep.
What polls well is where they go. Well, end of story, you know?
And you know that this past week was the 25th birthday for the World Wide Web, and our good friend of the show, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, of the show?
And you didn't send me a card. I was kind of distraught by the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. I don't do that stuff anyway. I suppose you wanted something on Valentine's Day, didn't you?
Well, you
expected it, didn't you?
I thought the underwear of the month membership came from you. I'm sorry. Was I wrong on that?
No. Okay. That's Graham that sends those to you after he's done using them. Just kidding. Anyway. So Berners-Lee did this Magna Carta for the web, and he's actually created kind of an interesting site. I think, Tim, you put this up here, didn't you?
Yes.
He's put together an interesting website about this whole thing. I'll put a link in the show notes about the web's 25th anniversary and what's happening to the web and so on. And he's going to be doing things all year long. So this is sort of the year of the web. And so he'll be doing that. I'm trying to remember the name of the, trying to find the site right now. It's the, you know, Web 25 or something, but I'll put a link in the show notes so you guys have that, or everybody listening.
He works for Google now, right?
No, not Berners-Lee.
Who's he
thinking of? That's Vint Cerf. Yeah.
Oh, Vint Cerf. Right. So Berners-Lee is still independent and hanging out. And where does he live these days?
Is he still in Switzerland?
I think he's still in Switzerland, isn't he?
Yeah, I knew he was originally.
Interesting. It's webat25.org is the name of the site.
Webwewant.org is the other one as well.
Okay. Cool. So let's talk about the NSA planning to infect millions of computers with malware. So this came off of the Intercept, which is the site that Glenn Greenwald, the journalist that's covering a lot of this, is now working. He's the editor, so he's working for them. And the kicker is, you know, these documents keep coming out, but they're from 2008, or in this case, in a top secret presentation dated August 2009. The NSA describes blah, 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 right? Well, here's the kicker. It's 2014. So what's happened since? You know, are they, have they figured out how to eavesdrop through airwaves, you know, that sound is generated and they can grab it from anywhere in the world? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure that's it.
Yeah. So, but what they're doing is they're basically leveraging botnets to go off and reinfect other computers.
So the question is, you know, because all of these things keep coming out, you know, what is it that is ultimately going to happen because of all these revelations?
Well, it's already,
I guess that jaded part of me says nothing.
we'll talk about it a little bit in my security tip of the week today, but what's happening already is there's an acceleration in stuff that encrypts your sessions, encrypts your communications and so on. I mean, we're seeing more and more of that. And I think at the end of the day, that is going to be the big change, is there's going to be a big change in security so that you don't, I mean, you know, how creepy would it be if you turned around and you're in a coffee shop and there's somebody actually standing right behind you watching you surf? I mean, you turn around and go, you know, get the hell out of here. What are you doing? Well, I'm just watching everything you do on your computer. I mean, that would be just so creepy and weird, but that's exactly what, like last week on the 60 Minutes show, when they talked about how marketers have essentially created dossiers on all of us based on our habits, based on what we buy, based on where we go, and so forth. If you run some of these plugins like Ghostery on Firefox, you can start to see all the stuff that is being done when you go to the New York Times site.
I found that interesting that they highlighted their own website and noticed all of the reporting that was going on there. It's like a lot of that stuff has to be, you know, given permission, so, or have code embedded in it to make that all work. So it's like, it's not like CBS didn't know that was going on their own website.
Right. Well, and then speaking of being watched, we're all excited about iBeacon, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think it's got some potential.
Yeah. Well, and so, potential. You know, you walk into a Target store now, for example, and they've got a sign up that says, hey, use our free app and, you know, turn it on in the store for specials, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's great because now, you know, if the app is open, even if it's running in the background, they can track your movements through the store, which they do anyway now through cameras and they actually have people in the store that watch what people do as well. And but now with iBeacon, it'll work even if the app is off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not so sure I'm all keen on that.
Right. It's a blessing and a curse, both.
Right. Depending on what side you're on. I mean, there are things that I think that would be handy at. I would welcome the opportunity to have that work. For example, you know, when I use my phone to keep track of my mileage, you know, my driving and for my mileage reimbursements and things like that, I always forget to turn it on when I get in the car, you know, I would much rather have, I mean, it's set up so when you plug it into your, you know, your car charger or USB, it'll start automatically, but it doesn't always, you know, I don't always plug that in. So something like this, that I know it's going to take care of it, whether the app is on or not, I would kind of think would be great. But yes, it could be one of those things that once again, sort of violates that privacy, that personal space.
Well, so Tim, as a marketer, when you think about, you know, if you were going to be doing this and setting iBeacons up in a store, or a store chain for a client, and you entered into a discussion with them about the balance between what's possible and what they're willing to implement or what they're even willing to tell customers, what would be your guidance with respect to what you would tell that client?
Well, you don't want to be too creepy. And this has a lot of potential to be very creepy if you do too much with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be very helpful, and I think it can improve the customer's overall experience, whether it's a store or a restaurant or a winery or wherever you put these things. And there's a lot of very interesting applications, like, for instance, guided tours, whether they're, you know, outside at some place or, you know, in a museum or that kind of thing, which really would make it a lot more of a rich interactive experience. And I think a lot of people would like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's just like anything else, it can be overdone. So be careful you don't overdo it. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot of poor implementations at the beginning.
Well, people are figuring it out.
The first thing that everybody thinks about, you know, especially it's always amazing to me in the marketing world, the first thing, you know, people say is, what a great way to distribute coupons. It's the thing that we always, marketers come up with. It's like, oh, well, I could send out a coupon with that. And it's like, Yeah, right. But, you know, the great thing about the beacon and, you know, Bluetooth Low Energy in general is that ability to trigger something to happen, trigger some sort of mechanism. It's not about, you know, prompting a notification or sending an email or anything like that. It can do so many things. It can just prompt something inside the application to happen. And that may be something as benign as you visited this spot four times this week, or, something that doesn't even make your phone move. There's no evidence that you've passed a beacon until you open up that app. So there are a lot of opportunities.
Well, and that's, you know, the hard part is there are so many micro decisions that we all have to make. I mean, all of us on this cast, we've all had the experience where you download an app and you launch it for the first time and it wants to access your photos or your contacts, or it wants to access your location.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered that both my kids and my wife by default say no
mm-hmm.
to location always. And I thought, well, that's interesting, because I always do. And I wonder how many...
You always default no, or you always?
I always default no on location, yeah. Unless it's something that I want to have location work like a map app, for example.
I think that's human nature, first and foremost, because the first thing you want to do is guard your privacy.
Really? Because I tend to say yes, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Not in every app. Not if if there's a game or something and they want your location. Like, why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But
yeah.
But there are apps, you know, like Retail Me Not. I mean, that yeah. doesn't even work if you don't tell the location.
Right.
You know? So. Well,
and then news apps, you know, they want to know your location so they can then personalize the app to you. But I downloaded the new CBS Local app yesterday, which, of course, has over time they've replaced the custom app that WCCO had with the CBS Local. And they want to know your location so they can just customize all the content. That's local content, which is fine. I still said no. The app comes up, and then I can put in my location. I chose my city, which didn't have Minneapolis or St. Paul. It had Minnesota, by the way. Yeah, it did. I know. Guess they don't have a lot of content for us, huh?
There's Minneapolis is a CBS owned an operated market, so it's right. It's one of the few O&O's left in the world.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They figure, Minnesota, that means Minneapolis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they figure, oh, they're all living in the middle of a cornfield back there anyway.
Sure,
that's how much
as they fly
know.
Over. Oh, how funny! Well, hey, I threw this in this morning about Google dropping the price of their Google Drive plans.
Okay, yeah. So who's using Google Drive? Anybody?
I am.
I do.
You are. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, you get 200 gigs or 100 gigs, I think. No, it's 200 for 2 years when you get a Chromebook.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. I did not know that. Well, so I've got the 25 gigs that I bought quite some time ago when they had a deal on that. I don't know, it was like $5 a year or something. But they have a deal now, $100 for 10 terabytes. That's $100 a month, by the way.
Yeah.
But $2 a month for 100 gigs.
Yeah, I know. I'm paying $10 for Dropbox.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I did the same thing. I signed up for the $99 plan for 50 gigs, and then they bumped it to 100.
Right. That's going to put a lot of pressure on Dropbox.
It is. Yeah.
So what do you guys do with all this space? That's what I want to know. What do you guys store on all this
Dropbox
space?
Dropbox is the problem for me because I've got so many client connections there, and I really can't. If they had a cheaper plan that was like, I don't know, like 50 gigs or 25 gigs, I think I could operate that low because I would move everything to Google Drive because I've got, you know, over 200 gigs there. And
you know,
I have basically all of my working files. Everything that's not archived is in a combination of Google Drive or Dropbox.
See, I do exactly the same thing, and I had a client drop in photos and videos, and I had the thing synced on my laptop. I'm in a coffee shop wondering why the network is running so slow, and then I looked up, and there's Dropbox cranking. Well, he had put over 25 gigs worth of files in Dropbox. And I told him, I go, he was complaining. He goes, God, you know, it took a long time to upload. I go, well, yeah, yeah, no kidding. You know, cause he's on his office network and it's not that fast, but oh my gosh. But yeah, I thought this was a pretty, pretty aggressive price.
Yep. I mean, now, when it first started, Google Drive, I, of course, like everything, tried it just to see how it was, and I didn't see any, you know, great advantage to it. So I just continued to stay on Dropbox. Mm-hmm. Now, feature for feature, they're pretty equivalent. So I don't see really a lot of difference between the two, except that Dropbox tends to be more accepted. So if you say, hey, share something, you know, share a Dropbox with me, you know, most people know how to do that.
Well, not only that, but what people love is being able to right click or control click on a link, even in an embedded directory. You know, I mean, if you've got subdirectories way, way, way deep, you can link to a specific file and email that to someone and they can download it.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just little things like that that are incredibly useful. So,
yeah, Box and Dropbox are both headed towards IPOs too, right?
Yeah.
I even heard Kara Swisher on CNBC yesterday say that she thinks Microsoft could be looking at acquiring one or the other.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, she has no inside knowledge, you would think. Well, actually, she does. She has sources like crazy. And she also said, or LinkedIn would be a good acquisition for them. So I don't know. You know, she sniffs out a lot of stuff. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we see a big acquisition from Microsoft in the not too distant future.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
because,
you know,
when companies are positioning and filing for an IPO, they do put themselves in play or leading up to that anyway. And it's just as likely they could be acquired as reach the ultimate IPO. So something big could be happening in that space.
Well, so what I found interesting was I read one blog post, and I'm doing some investigation on it now, but it was about people sharing with Dropbox and people, you know, others inadvertently putting malware into Dropbox. Oh, and it was a problem on PCs because they could get it to auto run. They'd put the auto run in a shared Dropbox and it would auto run and infect the PC. And so I need to do some more investigation, find out if this is really a problem or not. But that was kind of freaky.
Yeah, so that is.
Kind of wonder about all this shared
storage.
Didn't
one of these services have an outage too? Am I remembering that correctly? Did Dropbox have an outage a while back? Or
I think so. I think they did, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose everybody does at some point.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I should have said this earlier in the Comcast story, but I had an outage. There was an outage in Eden Prairie a couple of weeks ago because of the change over to IPv6. So they knocked the network out for about 5 hours one evening. And then a couple weeks ago, had a residential outage here, which turned out to be a problem in my own internal network, as I discovered. Because these Mocha boxes, you know, these multimedia over cable, turns out that Comcast actually reverses the polarity of the box. You've got to plug the cable in opposite of what they tell you to, which I had no freaking idea. And there's not any documentation or whatever. It was the installer that told me that. But because I can't rely on residential, I've got to have, fast access, and I've got to have somebody, I can't take 2 days to have a tech come out. I went ahead and ordered Comcast Business Class, and that got installed. So here's the good news. The good news is I'm paying about $30 more a month for a slightly slower connection, but the throughput's better, especially at night because businesses aren't using it. Unlike my residential connection where everybody and their brother was on it at night, but it also has unlimited data. So even if they come out with data caps, I'm not going to have to worry about it. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So That was sort of a segue, Mr. Elliott, into the streaming, because that's why we're using nearly half a terabyte of stream data every month.
That was like one of the biggest segues I think I've ever. You told an entire Comcast story to segue into streaming.
That's right.
My gosh, that's really epic.
Okay. That was epic. Well, you mark that, and I'll mark it. Yeah. Okay. But so Amazon's doing a streaming box?
Yeah, so my question here, and the reason I put this in, is anyone going to buy this thing? I mean, we all have various ways to stream Amazon. I mean, Steve and I have got TiVos. I can do it with a Roku app. Even my Samsung Smart TV has an app for Amazon Instant, right?
Apple TV doesn't?
Apple TV doesn't, and I don't have an Apple TV, so
it doesn't really affect me. But I can, with my iPad... I can call up the Amazon app and then choose what I want to watch and then just touch AirPlay and it right to the Apple TV, and that takes over. So
I don't know. Maybe we're the wrong kind of customer here. Maybe a lot of people will buy these, but I don't see a huge market for Amazon to do their own box.
Well, I think they've got enough money that they can just say, well, let's control the whole experience if we can, or let's have the ability to be part of the whole experience.
Yeah. So, well, the only wrinkle is that apparently they're going to have a gaming service on it, which makes a lot of sense. I'm surprised Apple hasn't done this, because Roku has, and they have some pretty stupid games. But you know, if you had a game controller, like what they're showing, you know, or similar to it, I think a lot of people would use this, you know, especially if the price was like $99 or whatever, you know, and that could probably take a significant portion of the gaming market.
Well, you know, have you seen anything, Tim, on, or any of you guys on shopping, on anything with e-commerce? Because I'm really surprised that there aren't visual related catalogs available, or even because that's what I'm thinking with Amazon, is maybe they're looking, you know, toward the future that people will be accessing, you know, audio and video and you know, maybe 3D stuff and everything through their television interface, and so that they can shop online and actually see the products and so on.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. The closest is an app that's on the smart TV that has a store which sells merchandise that is connected to television shows. So in some cases, it's just their T-shirt or whatever. In other cases, it's like literally costumes and other things that are worn on the show, and you can buy them.
Okay.
But that's as close as I've seen to it.
Because on the Apple TV, what interests me is if I'm logged in with my account and if I allow the Apple TV to make purchases, you know, without having to put my password in, then obviously you can buy movies and buy or rent movies and TV shows, but you can also buy through iTunes. So you can buy music as well and have that available on all your devices. So that, I didn't think it was too much of a stretch to think, well, maybe they'll move into television advertising or television catalogs. And that's why I think Amazon's probably in the business. I mean, it just sort of
seems there you logical. Go.
Yep.
But,
we'll have to keep an eye on it though.
Yeah.
Speaking of iTunes, I listened to iTunes Radio for the first time at Coco the other day when I was decided to cut the noise, background noise out, and listen to some music. It was pretty cool. I liked it.
Yeah, I like it too. There's not enough selection, you know, in terms of being able to make your own playlists like Pandora or Spotify. But
I don't do that though. So
just buy Neil Young's new hi-fi iPod competitor.
I got to save up for that.
Well, Phil's getting one, aren't you, Phil?
I think I will get one of these, because this is sort of, I don't know if you guys remember way back when my rant on MP3, years ago. So, you know, here we are surrounded by high technology and brilliant people creating all sorts of things. And MP3 is the best we can come up with for a streaming, you know, online source of music. My God.
I remember when you did that. Yeah.
Oh, my God. MP3s just, you know, compress the crap out of music and you lose a lot of the fidelity. So, absolutely. I think this is brilliant. And yeah, I think I will probably just support my man, Neil Young. And
well, I'm a huge Neil Young fan. And I've been tracking this for some time. And it's $400. I mean, you can do the Kickstarter and get it as low as $200, but you have to rebuy all your music again for like $15 to $20 a pop.
Yeah. And that's the problem. And that's probably the one thing that will keep me from doing it until it comes down a wee bit in price. So,
well, and I put a link in the show notes about Neil Young's Link Vault. And what he did basically was take an old classic Lincoln, take the engine out and drop a hybrid engine in there. Yeah. And it's all electric.
Is it a hybrid or is it biodiesel?
No, it's all electric, I think.
It is.
Yeah. So it's all battery driven. And his whole reason for this is to essentially set up a method by which people can essentially retrofit their old cars with battery technology, which is kind of cool. You know, Tesla's not going to get in that business. So Neil Young's got to.
Right. Well, I mean, he was big into biodiesel several years ago. In fact, his tour buses run biodiesel.
Yeah. Right.
And that was his first thing as he converted, because he's been a car collector for, 45 years or whatever. And he's got lots of old classic Lincolns, and I think he's just a Ford guy. But anyway, his original Lincoln was biodiesel, and now he's going electric. So he's writing a book about this. His car.
Oh, really? Collection.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He's got a lot of money to throw around. I thought I read about that battery powered car burning up not too long ago, though, or one of them that he had. We had a major problem.
You know, that happens.
Yeah, it does. To the best of them, I guess.
Yeah. What are you going to do with that? Yeah. Did you see that? Have you seen who the sponsors are for Linkavolt?
Or no.
Linkavolt?
No.
Linkavolt. Hard Rock Cafe is the top level sponsor.
Hmm. That makes sense.
Interesting. Hey, there's going to be a new Hard Rock Cafe at the Mall of America.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow. So this Pono player on Kickstarter raised $2 million in the first 2 days.
Yep.
Who did?
Pono player. You can Kickstart it, and it's 2.4 million in the first 48 hours.
Well, with a name like Neil Young, you know, I mean,
well, look at some of the names that he's got associated with it.
Oh, he's got it. Look at the
watch
the video, and it's like a who's who of both classic and current rock and roll people.
I mean, I'm telling you, this is, I'm so glad that somebody picked up the, you know.
Wow. Look, it's actually 3.4 million right now. I just went to the page.
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing. These are people that are passionate about the sound of music, and not the movie, but the sound of actual music. That you know,
they might be passionate about.
They
the sound.
Could be. They could be. You never know.
But it happens.
Wonderful. You know, MP3 is such old technology, and we all understand why MP3 has to be the way it is because of bandwidth. But as bandwidth gets broader and broader and broader, you know, come on, let's go. Let's get some good files rolling here. Yep.
So, bring back
some of that stuff. You know, it's just a matter of, I want to be able to hear the music without the cracks and pops. That's all I want to do. You know, the cracks and pops of vinyl, because vinyl still has a superior sound over MP3, except for the cracks and pops, of course.
Yeah. I like for the cracks and pops.
It makes it authentic.
Well, that's authentic to you, old man.
Okay.
You know? Just like the sound of the 8 tracks changing in the middle of a song. Now that's the sound of real music right there.
There you go. God, I sold all my old 8 tracks with my Airstream a year and a half ago. I hated to let those things go.
boy.
God, you had an Airstream trailer?
Ram is letting go of pieces of his past.
Well, I didn't buy them when they were new. I bought them on eBay because the Airstream came with a really cool AM FM 8-track player. Ooh. And I thought, well, I got to get some stuff to play. And, you know, I got a lot of great old stuff, but I thought, well, what am I going to do with these things? So I just let them go with the Airstream. Yeah.
AM, FM, and 8-track.
Dude. Yeah, in one unit. Yeah. Wow. But anyway, yeah, those were the days, baby, when you had that click or whatever it was between.
Junk. No. And she's buying a stair ka-chunk to heaven.
Yeah, they wouldn't do that right in the middle of something like
Sometimes
that.
Sometimes they would. Yes, they would. I could remember.
Well, not at a dramatic moment like that.
But. Oh, come on.
Yeah. I can remember when we switched over, got a new car and it had a cassette deck in it. And you had to switch all your music over.
Ooh.
And that was quite a thing because you could listen to the entire side on one. You know, it's like, man, this is like a record player.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You didn't have to listen to the four clunks. Or actually the three. Because wow. It would go like all the way and then it would back and then it would go again and back. Yeah. Anyway.
Anywho.
Those were the days.
Oh, stop. But anyway, I'm very excited about the fact that a better quality of audio.
Yeah, well,
becoming a player.
It looks like the public has spoken and they're well on their way.
Yep. Now he's got a whole boatload of followers or what do you call them when you support Kickstarter? Backers.
Backers.
They got to communicate with. Which now the fun really begins. It's a big, big group.
There's what, projecting June? Is that what I saw?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and you know how those dates go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So how do we transition to this item I put in about no tabloid running Microsoft and Android, the dream must wait?
I think we just skip over it.
I thought Tim would react to that.
Well, no, a tabloid or a tablet?
This is a good idea, but what I'd like to see is a Chrome OS and Android dual boot. I mean, in a laptop form factor, you know, like the Asus Transformer. And hopefully Google would approve something like that. So when you put it in the dock, it goes to Chrome OS mode, and when you pull it off, the screen off, it's Android.
Well, yeah, they should be happy with that, but they weren't about to allow Asus to do Microsoft and Android on one machine. Well,
that would be a killer combination, though, because you know you'd run in laptop mode in basically Windows 8, and then when you pull it off, it would boot into Android. So this sort of the best of both worlds, because you know obviously. You don't have a lot of app selection on the Windows side for their tablet apps.
Yeah.
So getting around that would be good, and it would be a very useful device, I think, that a lot of people would like.
Well, they showed it at CES. I understand.
Oh, they
but
did.
They just can't get approval to do it.
Well, not they from both sides. Strangely,
right.
I would think that Microsoft would want something like this.
Yeah.
But I guess not.
Hmm. There's right. No love lost between Google and Microsoft, I guess.
Oh, yep. No.
Well, then, but it keeps Microsoft out of the game. So that, you know, doesn't make sense for them to do that.
Yeah, well, they got some other tricks up their sleeve, maybe.
Let's hope.
God, they better.
All right. So, Steve, are you naked in the coffee shop?
I am not. Wait a minute. Is it that time? Wait, is it that time?
It might be.
It is that time for
Steve's Security Tip of the Week.
I believe we need to rename this today because this is more of a security book of the week. Because
there's a bunch of links, but it's very, very simple. It's very simple.
And the great thing about the last link is it downloads a bot onto your computer.
No.
Wow.
No. Okay, so here's what it's all about. I put the provocative title in of Are You Naked in a Coffee Shop? Because today's tip is on ways to ensure you're secure when you're in a Wi-Fi hotspot. Especially the ones now, I mean, you go to a Caribou, there's not even a password to connect up in most Caribous now. You just get in there, you open it up, and you're on the guest network. Well, it automatically handshakes with it. And oftentimes I'm in conferences like I was at the Minnesota High Tech Association last year, and you open it up and there's the free public Wi-Fi as an option. You know, it's some guy, who's trying to do a man in the middle attack. But at any rate, I'm in a coffee shop with a buddy. We're sitting across from each other, and his daughter and two of her friends are at the next table over, and they're huddled around one of their laptops. And pretty soon out comes the credit card, and they're buying on Amazon. And it's fine because it's an HTTPS connection, but everything was going through an unencrypted connection through Wi-Fi. And, so everything else that they were doing, checking email, doing anything with any non-secure HTTPS session was going through the air, unencrypted. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about it in the things that you need to do. But at the end of the day, there are VPN services, virtual private network services, and I've really been looking at these a lot. And some are okay, and you got to pay $5, $10, $15, $20 a month, whatever it is. But more and more of them are offering PC, Mac, Android, and iOS compatibility with a single VPN account. And you can buy multiple access. And so I'm going to put a link in the show notes to 10 VPN services you should know about from PC Mag. And then one that wasn't in there, and they've recently made some pretty dramatic changes, is one called OpenVPN that was started as an open source project, and now it's also commercial open source. It's kind of a geeky solution because you can buy an OpenVPN server license for $75 a year for 10 clients, serve it in your own home network, and then you connect to your own home network when you're somewhere. So you essentially have unlimited bandwidth. Or if you're not a geek, you can buy their private tunnel service, which is their OpenVPN commercial service, and you can connect unlimited devices, PC, Mac, Android, or iOS. And if you look at the price points, they're really have become aggressive. I mean, it's almost like this stuff is changing almost on a daily basis. And so you can have for $12 a year, you can have 50 gigs of transfer, and $20 a year, 100 gigs, $50 a year, 500 gigs. And that sounds like a lot, but you know, if you have, like we do, 4 iPhones, 3 iPads, laptops, you know, blah, blah, blah. If you're using all these devices, you can burn up that, that bandwidth pretty quickly. So at any rate, the ability to get into this stuff inexpensively is real. And then everything you do online is encrypted. So you walk into a coffee shop, it doesn't matter. You know, if you're inadvertently connecting to some guy's Linux laptop, everything's encrypted and he or she won't see anything at all that you're doing. So, and there's some other good stuff with VPNs. You know, if you want to watch British television, you can use a VPN to connect up with servers in other parts of the world. So you can actually get connected and see things. There's some VPN services that hide the fact that you're using BitTorrent to, for example, steal movies. None of us do that. But there are so many phones, like my daughter lets her iPhone just automatically connect to Wi-Fi networks. And she'll connect to anything. Doesn't matter.
Oh boy.
And I just, I get freaked out about that and try to help everybody understand the risks. But at any rate, that was my security tip of the week.
Nice job, Steve.
Yep. Very good. You got up early to do that one, right?
Well, I had to take my wife to the airport. Got up at 4:30, so I had a little extra time this morning to go through this stuff and collect everything. And
well, listen, before we speed off, upcoming events, anything new, you guys? Has anybody heard? We got tickets available for Mini Bar yet?
No, we haven't heard.
Nothing yet. Okay. The Edutech Showcase and Forum. I did a post on Minovate because they sent me their info. And that's on April 2nd.
Thursday is Mobile March. We still have some tickets available. So we'd like you to see, I'd like to see you come out. That's at the Earl Brown Heritage Center. And then we also noticed today that the MHTA Spring Conference has announced that May 6th is their conference at the Civic Center. And get your tickets now. Hurry. Stanley Hubbard will be a keynote.
Oh, Mr. High Tech.
Yeah.
The guy who still uses the push-button phone in his office, the old style. I was told that by someone who works over there not long ago. Yeah, so maybe he'll be talking about how he's finally gotten into, VoIP phones or what are these newfangled things called? Smartphones?
No. He'll announce that he no longer has his email printed. Yeah, my assistant is no longer printing my email. I'm actually using this thing called a web browser to look at my email.
Hubbard has done a lot of great stuff
in the world of. I'm just
especially in broadcast. But Stanley is 80, so you probably ought to get tickets now.
That's right.
And he's only, maybe you could ask him and maybe he'd buy him for him because he is, according to Forbes, worth $2.3 billion.
Yeah.
How often do we get to hear a billionaire speak?
I know. Not very often.
No. How often? And again, Stanley, how about a little something for the effort, you know?
That's right.
I ran into him once in the restroom at the Minneapolis club, but, I didn't have much of a chance to talk to him.
I was going to say, was somebody peeing for him or?
No, that doesn't work that way. But this will give me a chance to hear him in person. And
there you
that's
go.
Right.
Along with 400 or 500 other people, that's probably. Right.
Yeah, Hubbard Broadcasting is just as a short aside and a nod to my past. Hubbard Broadcasting is still one of the most respected broadcasters out there. One of the great places to work in a world of broadcasters that have gone homogenized. Hubbard has done a great job not doing so. They're very, people go to work there and never leave.
That's right. They love it there. Yeah. And so, hats off to them.
Yep.
You betcha.
So, all right, boys.
So don't forget Mobile March on the 20th, right?
Right.
Right.
The Native X party is Tuesday night.
There's a Native X party?
Oh, isn't that in San Francisco though?
No, is it really?
Well, that's
it is in San Francisco.
Developers conference.
Yeah, it's at GDC.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm not going to that then.
I was there last year, and they do it upright.
You know what though? Maybe if we were nice to Stanley Hubbard, I could have called him and asked him if I can use his jet. Fly out there, go to the party.
No, you're going to Mobile March.
Yep. No, Tuesday night. See, I fly out for the party, go to the party, then come back.
Yeah. Come back
that same night, maybe. Gotcha. Sleep on the plane.
All right. So anyway, we'll tell you all about what happens there and just how many free beers, we save because Graham's not going to be able to make it. And we'll talk about it next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast. Take care, guys.
Yep. Have a good week.
Well, some folks jump, jive, and win. They feel alive until this day. Play the boogie woogie. Said your money's almost gone. You cry complaining and you moan. You miss a boat cause you too old. Either tide is too cold. Never blame yourself, it's always me. Like a blind man you just can't see. The side of you we lead a room. All you talk about is blue. That bad, nobody cares. Now ain't that sad? Don't dig jokes, they ain't no good. Loosen up, baby, just like you should.
get tired of hearing you whine. You get the picture, I made it clear. Boy, you ain't welcome here. You say your man didn't get no booty. That's why I wrote the complaints, boogie woogie.